From Duval, Washington, it's the 407 Cast. Here's your host, RSD Superintendent, Dr. Susan Leach.
Hello, and welcome to the 407 Cast, your window into the dynamic world of education in the Riverview School District, where we discuss our achievements, the challenges we face, and the innovative ways we are accelerating learning, and we're excited you chose to listen in. Welcome to all our listeners. We're happy you chose to listen to today's conversation, as we have a very special guest this morning. Continuing with our trend of looking at some members of our community who are impactful in serving our community and the youth of our community, I want to introduce this week's guest, the mayor of the city of Carnation, Jim Rebale. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the 407 Cast.
Thank you. Hey. Glad to be here.
And I'm glad to have you here. I would love it if you could just talk for a minute about yourself and your background and just how you came to be in public service, serving our community.
Yeah. I grew up in a small town in eastern Washington. My wife and I both did. I moved my office over to Bellevue, and I was looking for a kind of small town feel to move into. And we found Carnation in 2007, 2008, and moved out here. And it's been a great little community to raise our kids in. And now they've went through the Riverview School District, and they're off to college, doing well. It's a great valley. I got involved in, I'll call it politics, community, mm-hmm. Let's call it community service maybe at the local level. And I started paying a lot of attention to city council meetings and what was going on in the city, how things were happening. And I'm really big on budgets. I've owned my own business for the last 25 years. I work for a company now that I'm the vice president of, so I'm very conscious on that. And I just wanted to really find a way to make city government budgets more transparent. I ran and lost my first time. Ran again and got in, and I've been on city council now for 7 years. Wow. My eighth year is coming up, and I've been the mayor for the last 2.5 years. Kim Lisk, who was the former mayor, left and moved to Arizona. I was the deputy mayor at the time and got appointed. And so that's how I came to be at city council. So
yeah, that happened right after I arrived in this community, that transition. So I remember that well. I was actually here for that.
It's fun. Carnation government's different than Duval's government. We actually have everybody on council gets elected to a seat. And then the council members vote for who they want to be the mayor. So it's an appointed position more than anything.
So the community doesn't vote for a mayor. They just vote for council.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I like it because everybody on council has the same voice. Everybody's vote matters going forward. So it works out well for the city of Carnation.
I have a lot of things I want to ask you about today, but as long as we're talking about your role as mayor in the city of Carnation, I know that you are currently working on your comprehensive plan, and I know it's a massive undertaking. I wonder if you could talk for a second just about what a comprehensive plan is, what's involved, and how that work is proceeding.
Yeah, so basically it's a planning document that goes out to the state and then back to the county. They give us goals that we have to reach or the metrics they want us to reach, and then we plan around those on basically what the community is going to look like in 2040. So it's a long-range planning document that gets revisited periodically, but this is the first step in a long-range planning document. There's several elements that go into it. Transportation is an element. How do we get people in and out of the valley in a responsible way? What does our road infrastructure look like? Land use element, how are we going to zone the city of Carnation and our growth management areas, and how does that look going forward? And infrastructure. So how are we planning for water and sewer capacity, things like streets, roads, all of that? So this is the heavy lift that we do, and then it gets tweaked throughout the years as we go forward with that. Our biggest issue this year has been our land use element. The state came to us last year and said, you need to build 800 new homes in the city of Carnation. And I said, in addition to the 230 that we have already going in the ground? And they said, yeah, in addition to. And I said, I'm sure this pencils at a whiteboard in downtown Seattle.
Yeah,
but right. I don't know if it really pencils out here.
Wow.
So we're going through a reconciliation process right now, trying to get that number reduced to 350 from the 800 that was there.
And where would they go?
Actually, we have a couple cities that want to take our housing targets. And so they already have builders that are in process. They actually need the numbers, and they are on the east side of King County, so it makes sense. So we are just trying to get the regional board to approve our housing target numbers can go actually to those communities that actually want them and actually need them to complete some of the projects. So we think we have a pretty good path. One thing that we did do is we had the low income stay with Carnation, the low income housing target, because it's divided into several bands. And we took the higher income target and housing target, and we're passing that off to another community. So that brings up a lot of, you know, interesting challenges of how do we do that? Because when you're bringing in townhomes, apartment buildings, items like that, transportation is a big factor. Currently, right now, we do not have transportation to major metro connection points in the valley. And so that's a tough thing to overcome. We've been working with SVT, which is Snoqualmie Valley Transportation. They've been a great partner in the valley. And they're a great partner between North Bend and Duval to get people back and forth through everything. We're just missing the connection point to Redmond and to Issaquah to get people out of the valley to, you know, get to jobs, get to doctor's appointments, get to things like that that they need. And SVT has, you know, said, we can do this. We just need more funding from hopefully King County to make this happen. That's something that we're working on right now in a big way. And something that came to light a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Councilmember Claudia Balducci. She's on the Housing Target Board, and we were talking about transportation. And a lot of the elected officials throughout the region don't realize that we don't have transportation. It was a big surprise. And I liked her statement where she said, we really need to start thinking of this as a utility, as a service, and not just a service. It needs to be something that needs to be because our taxpayers,
necessity.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're working on the land use element, the transportation element. Kind of goes to the whole factor. When Linwood opened up their light rail station, I think last month, the big thing was the parking lots are always, it's full. People can't get in. Well, the same thing's going to happen when Redmond opens up their light rail, because people for Seahawks games, Sounders games, even go to work, they're going to pack those parking stations. If we had reliable transportation to get out to these connection points, it'd make a big regional impact. So that's something that we're working on.
I would love it if you could give our listeners an update on where we are with the Tolt Dam and the alarm system and what's happening next. You were so instrumental in bringing that to the forefront, raising awareness and demanding action on this issue. And I think it'd be great if you could just give a little update. I haven't heard much in the last few months about it.
It's interesting. It's a couple steps forward, a couple steps back going forward. You know, this happened in 2020, was the first false alarm that happened. It was probably, honestly, the best thing to happen to Carnation in the Valley, because we realized how unprepared we were for the event. Mm-hmm. It was traumatic. People are still traumatized by the sirens when they go off, even for testing, which currently they're not right now. It really shined a light on what we needed to do and preparedness to do this. So kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time. So we've been fighting this fight since 2020 to do this. SPU, which is Seattle Public Utility, is in charge of the dam and in charge of the warning systems in Carnation and in the valley. They went for an immediate upgrade to all of our siren systems because the sirens were from the 1950s. There was issues with them, obviously. The new sirens went in. The new sirens, again, had some issues with things going off, but we think it was because of the timeline that was ramped up to get the new system installed to take care of the problem. But some good things that have come out of it is now this valley's geofenced. So you used to have to sign up for alerts through King County, and then your phone would go off if there was ever an issue. But now we have it where even if someone's traveling from the East Coast and visiting us here out in the fall with the pumpkin patches and stuff like that, if there ever is an emergency, all electronic devices will go off.
Oh, interesting.
It will also go off like an amber alert on all TVs and all radio stations. So those are all passive type things that will happen automatically now. So that's a huge upgrade for everybody in the valley, but it still leaves out a big component of it. Currently, we've made the decision to have the sirens off until we can guarantee that they go on and they don't have any more false alarms. Because we just saw the level of trust go out, because I think we've had 6 false alarms since 2020. I remember, I probably shouldn't tell this story, but I remember the last false alarm that went off, I went out the door to evacuate and my neighbors were on the phone to SPU. I'm like, what are you doing? This is, we go.
Yes.
And they're like, no, we're going to check to make sure that it's, you know, a really false alarm. That level of trust with warning devices don't work. So we're circling back around with SPU. We're still working with them. I have a level of frustration. I'll just say it because, and I've said it before on TV find on interviews is that if this would happen in any place else in Seattle, this would be fixed in 2021. Mm-hmm. We're going up to 2025 with not a fully commissioned system. And I think that it's ridiculous at this point. And I've had meetings with SPU. I've had meetings with the mayor's office in Seattle. Stated that publicly, that if this was happening in Magnolia or Capitol Hill or wherever else, those systems would be operational right now completely. So we do have a good passive system. We need a bigger passive active system that people can hear if they're out walking on the trails and out in the woods, and people don't want to take their cell phones sometimes because people are trying to disconnect and, yes, you know, walk in the woods. So we still need those systems to get activated and do that. That's where we're at currently with the dam.
For context, I know, you know, we have people in the community that are new or that live in Duval and maybe aren't impacted by this, or just someone listening from outside the community. Mm-hmm. Could you give a little context about the importance of that alarm system and what would happen if the dam were to breach?
If the dam was at a full breach, the city of Carnation has about an hour and 15 minutes to evacuate before basically a wall of debris comes down the Tolt River. So the Tolt River will be a decimating act for the community, for lives lost, and it would change the face of the valley floor forever. We saw, you know, it was a big eye-opening stuff when we saw the hurricanes coming into Tennessee and Kentucky. And I think it was in Tennessee where there was a dam that burst and wiped out, you know, a small town. And so that was something that we said, you know, this still
that
needs to. Yeah. You know, I've visited the dam three times now. Mm-hmm. I'm confident in the safety of the dam, but so were the people back east.
Yeah.
So you always prepare for the worst and, you know, hope for the best. And the best thing that we can do is have a warning system that lets people get out of the valley. And you don't have to get out of the valley. You just have to get to a high place. Mm-hmm. And it's not as high as everybody thinks it is. You know, we have Evacuation Hill in Carnation that people can get up to. And it's a walking on two sides of that hill to get up on top that will then give us access to evacuate people to Duval and the Stillwater area and places like that. It's a big concern. And, you know, we only have three cross-valley connections to get out of the valley. That's Tolt Hill Road, Carnation Farms Road, 124th. If one of those were to fail or go down in the event of an earthquake, how many cross-connection valleys be able to get people out of? So it's a huge concern.
When I attended the forum that you held, I was so moved by people's stories. I was not here in 2020 when that false alarm happened. The amount of people that spoke that were even at this point reduced to tears over what happened during that event, really incredible. I also will say that I was hearing the same kinds of comments that you described with your neighbor with our own staff in terms of, well, if the alarm goes off, we're going to make sure it's for real before we start evacuating, and trying to fight that narrative to say, no, you have to move. You cannot wait to confirm whether it's actual emergency or not. Get moving. That level of trust, even with our students, we would hear students say that all the time. It's probably just false anyway. Why are you going to make us leave the school? I just can't even convey how much damage that has done and how that could affect our response if there were an actual event. So I really appreciate the advocacy on the part of you and the city.
Well, I mean, that statement there kind of makes me sad a little bit, because when it happened in 2020, the only citizens that really knew what to do were the kids. Mm-hmm. And we all noticed that because Riverview does your yearly evacuation drill. Mm-hmm. And so all the kids knew exactly where to go. They were telling their parents, no, this is where we need to go.
Yeah.
And so if we're losing the trust of the kids that were the best prepared for this during the 2020 false alarm, and they're questioning now, that's a huge deal. And it goes to that whole boy that cried wolf scenario again. And it's something that needs to stop. And it's something that we're trying to work with SPU in a big way. And if this was in Magnolia or Capitol Hill, it wouldn't be an issue in 2025, which it still is. Because I'm pretty sure it's going to last another month of being an issue.
Yeah, sure. One of the things that I'm very excited to talk to you about, switching gears a little bit, is a project that you and I have been working on together. And it is an outgrowth of a few different things. Mm-hmm. The school district held some focus groups that were an outcome of the previous bond initiative, The other thing this was an outgrowth of was last year's Key Leaders Summit, which we've talked about in other episodes. This is a consortium of leaders in the area that get together to talk about issues that are impacting youth. And one of the things that came out of that, the leading concern that adults and professionals that work with youth in the community expressed, was that our kids need things to do. They need things to do after school. They need safe places to be after school. And so we started working on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you might give a little background just from your perspective. I've only been here a couple of years, but I think this is an issue that you've been really passionate about.
I want to thank you and your staff for getting this done. I grew up in that small town in Eastern Washington, and there was always a couple of dads that had the keys to the local gym, and they'd go and open it up, and kids would go in and all that stuff. Times have changed. And it's a bigger endeavor than I imagined that it was going to be, just to jump through all the hoops and get it done. It's been great because, you know, I saw it when my kids were little. Weather's changing now. We're in fall going into winter, and there's no place for kids to go and blow off steam outside. Part of the housing now is where everything's smaller yards. And even if you have a bigger yard, it's going to be muddy this time of year and cold. Mm-hmm. So how to get kids outside and playing together. And I think it's even more impactful since COVID, because, you know, kids lost a couple years of actually sports and playing together and congregating together. And I think it's learning them how to play with each other again, interact with each other again. I think it's a huge thing. And I think that came out of the Key Leader Summit was that, you know, this is a big need. And it's something that I've heard even when my kids were, you know, in school, saying, you know, they want someplace to go. Kids need to have some screen time. I get that. But they also need to get out and play some games, do some things, starting with Tolt Middle School to do that. I think that's huge. You know, if even one day a week to be able to have kids go out and play and have fun. And hopefully this program continues and expands and does some more. And I know we've talked about that. It's a huge deal for mental health, for just getting kids to be kids again. I think it's huge.
Yeah, I think it's really hard for me to understate the benefits of physical play for our kids, no matter the age. The physical benefits of that are very easy to describe, but there are so many other benefits. Kids learn how to cooperate with each other. They learn about competition. They learn about teamwork. They learn social skills. There are so many benefits to this in addition to just the physicality of play that, you know, something I talk about all the time. How do we get more of that built within the school day for our students? Because I think it's that important. What we're doing, just to be very clear, is starting at Tolt Middle School in January, one day a week, we will be opening up the gym in the evening. I'm trying to remember if we decided on 5 to 8 or 4 to 7.
It was 5 to 8 is what we're thinking.
Yeah, that's what I thought we landed on. But yeah. But for that 3-hour time period, we will have trained volunteers. Volunteers will be background checked. They'll have first aid training. They'll have preventative training that we typically give our coaches, how to work with youth, things to do and not to do when you're working with youth. The volunteers will be trained. They'll be background checked, and they will be supervising students. This is open to any student. These do not have to be students of the Riverview School District. We welcome any student that lives in our community, whether they are homeschooled or attend private school. We want you all to come in and enjoy this benefit. We are hoping, once we work the bugs out and have a nice system going, that we can expand this, not only the number of days a week that we're offering it, but to some other school locations. And so as that grows and develops, I will definitely provide updates. But I would also like to say that if this is something that you're interested in, if you are someone that would love to volunteer for something like this, please watch our website, because we will be putting out some information fairly quickly about how to sign up for this opportunity that will begin in January. Is there anything else that I'm missing about this that we should probably let people know?
I just kind of want to double down on, this is a volunteer-driven organization. So this isn't going to happen. None of the cities are going to make this happen. Riverview's not going to make this happen other than opening up their facilities, which is great. We need people to sign up to be volunteers. I hear it from every parent that I've talked to. we need this opportunity to get kids out of the house. Everybody's going to kind of step up and volunteer because there's going to be a big demand. We need to have at least 2 volunteers at the facilities at all times together. And so we'll have a sign-up sheet. But if this is, you know, something that you care about to get kids out and playing, this is going to be a community-driven thing. We really need the community to step up and go, you know what, I'm going to give 3 hours of my time maybe every month, but not every week, you know, to do that and really get behind it. Because I think it's a huge benefit for the kids.
You know, the other people that I want to shout out to a little bit on this are one, Nathan Scherfe from Remlingers, who has been a huge supporter of our efforts and is also going to, in tandem with our program, going to open up some time at Remlingers for game nights for students. So same kind of model. They'll be supervised. They will be able to come into Remlingers and have game night once a week or even 2 or 3 mm-hmm. times a week. We're still working out all of the details, but Nathan has already committed to that. Really appreciate it. He's been such a great partner both to the school district and to the Carnation community. Yeah. I can't even begin to talk about all of the different things that he does and Remlingers does for our community. EYN, the Empower Youth Network, has also expressed an interest in being involved as we kind of start to sort through this and work out the bugs. As I said a minute ago, they would like to have some kind of an active part in this as we move forward. So lots of people in the community that are coming together to support our youth in a way that doesn't cost them money, is a free resource for our students, and really excited to see where this goes as we move forward in January. And I appreciate your partnership as well on this and the nudge, honestly, because we get so tied up with so many different things, and just having that on our radar and wanting to make this work has been a really great partnership. So I appreciate that.
Now I realize being on city council, there's always things that you want to do, but sometimes you have to be reminded a bunch.
Sure.
And so I get it. And there's a lot on Riverview's plate and on your plate. Mm-hmm. And so to finally get this done, I just think it's huge, and I just want to thank you and your staff again.
Yeah, it's a big celebration.
Yeah.
And with that, it sounds like our time is just about up. So I feel like that went by fairly quickly today. So Jim, I just want to thank you again. It has been such a pleasure to be able to sit and talk a little bit about things that are happening in the community and your role in those. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And to all those listening at home or in your car, wherever you may be, thank you for joining us. And remember to listen in next week as we continue our conversations on all things education.